This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Scott Hayes, president of the National Pork Producers Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NPPC's Scott Hayes next. As a leader in the industry, we at Bayer have the opportunity and responsibility to help address the challenges around sustainability and ensure that we can all thrive while using our planet's resources in a sustainable way. Sustainability is an integral part of our operations, and we believe that farmers and agriculture can be a part of the solution to many of the planet's biggest challenges. Whether that's helping growers utilize new technologies to get more out of their land or incentivizing carbon-smart farming practices such as strip or no-till and planting cover crops, we're committed to innovate, grow, and partner with farmers to help shape what's possible and further our vision of health for all, hunger for none. For more on Bayer's sustainability efforts, visit www.bayer.com/en/US/United States Sustainability. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Missouri's Scott Hayes is a fifth-generation pig farmer, a father, and a grandfather. He understands the challenges of raising livestock and says the scope of obstacles his children face are much broader than he or generations before have ever seen.
You know, in their day, the guy that just got out there and worked the hardest, just physically worked the hardest, did the best. And then my dad's generation, it kind of transitioned to, you know, you still had to work hard, but you better do a good job at the desk. And then that's where my generation came in. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, we did well or didn't do well depending on how we ran the business. This next generation truly has to understand the global market, but also has to understand the forces that's coming at them. What aggravates me is the folks that want to arbitrarily raise our cost of production. The reason we've done so well as U.S. producers across the barnyard is because we're the low-cost producers in the world. We've got the best garden or the best ground in the world, and that allows us to be low-cost producers. We need to protect that. And we've got these outside forces that want to raise that cost of production for whatever reason. That's going to make us where we're not competitive on a world market.
Scott, let's venture into the economics of the business. Pork prices, cyclical for sure, back to hog farmers like yourself. Where are you now in terms of profit and loss?
You know, unfortunately, we're in a pretty tough time right now, and I know some of the folks are comparing it to 98, you know, the losses per head are similar to that. You know, when we go through these times, we seem to reshape the industry, and I'm not sure what this one's going to look like, but I know we're going to look different coming out, you know, the other end of this thing.
The voters of California brought forth Proposition 12, and it was approved. And even with a Supreme Court consideration, it is set to go into effect. How important is California to pork farmers across the country?
You know, California is a big market. You know, for us, it's about 15% of the domestic pork consumption. And so, you know, what we've chose to do at NPPC is to try to work with the folks at the Department of Ag in California and the governor and the attorney general to make sure that we keep pork flowing in California, make sure the store shelves have some pork on it. And we got the 4th of July weekend coming up here and certainly want people to enjoy pork, you know, on the 4th of July barbecue. It's unfortunate that, you know, we have to deal with this the way we do, but we're going to work with them for the producer's sake, but also for the consumer. Consumers deserve to have a low-cost, high-quality protein like pork, and we're going to do what we can to see that they have that.
Scott, was there a given basis for the 24-square-foot rule for a sow?
You know, we can't find any scientific reason for the 24 square feet. We're not sure where the activists come up with that number. In fact, the courts in California have told the state they can't claim that this is better for the animals because it just simply isn't. Specifically to Prop 12, you know, it has us mixing animals, putting animals in groups at the wrong time. I've said it several times, but sows are bullies, especially right after you wean them. Their hormones are different, and that's not the proper time to put them in groups in a pen housing system. And there's other issues to do with Prop 12 about the way we have to run our treatment pens that just aren't good for the animal.
So finally, with this on this topic, I'll bring this question. 11 different states representing over half of the country's pork production is supporting the Exposing Agriculture Trade Suppression Act, or the EATS Act. Is the National Pork Producers Council behind this? Is it gaining any traction on the Hill?
You know, the EATS Act's been out there for a little while, my understanding, and we're certainly taking a look at that. You know, we support legislation to help fix this issue of, you know, of states passing different rules on production, because that's our fears. You know, we're going to create all these micro markets that would be real hard to produce into. And the EATS Act may be, you know, a vehicle to get that done. It has a little bit of traction here this summer, you know, with the Supreme Court rule. We're looking at that. You know, we want to make sure that it accomplishes everything that we need to accomplish, and that, you know, that it can make its way through Congress.
Scott, I'll ask this for you personally, and then also as a representative of pork producers in the country. How important is sustainability and stewardship to you and your farm and to producers across the country?
You know, when I first started hearing about sustainability and stewardship years ago, wasn't sure what that meant. And then I realized, well, that's just what we do every day. You know, that's how we continue to get better. But we're being asked to measure that like everybody else is. And we're really proud of the numbers that we're able to put up now that we're, you know, that we are measuring, what modern pig production does for a farm as a whole. And I think we've known that for a long time. You know, we take pig manure and we grow grain to feed pigs. So we're proud of our record on that. You know, we continue to make more pork with less grain, less water, less energy, and we'll continue to get better. Genetics helps with that. Better facilities helps with that. And so as long as we don't have more things like Prop 12 that make us take a step backwards on that, we'll continue to get better.
Scott, last year, Constance Coleman with the American Feed Industry Association pointed out that Washington was slow to approve feed additives that would help to reduce emissions from livestock production. And we've also seen government that has been slow to approve and accept animal gene editing. Is it frustrating as a producer to know that technologies are available that would help you be more efficient and more sustainable that you just can't use yet?
Yes, certainly. It can be frustrating, you know, the pace that things get approved. But at the same time, you know, we want consumers to know that whatever we're using out on the farm has been through, you know, adequate testing or more than adequate testing, that they know they're getting a product that's safe, that they can feed their families. And, you know, and we want the same thing. You know, our families are eating the same thing their families are eating. And so we appreciate, you know, what government does to prove that. I think we have the safest food supply in the world, certainly the safest food supply, you know, in the history of the world. And that's because of those processes. So even though they're frustrating, a lot of it's necessary as well.
So, Scott, how does the recent Supreme Court decision on the Biden-WOTUS rule, how did that affect NPPC? How does that affect your view of moving ahead and defining what is a water of the U.S.?
You know, we're excited to finally get that ruling. Maybe we're finally putting WOTUS to bed. It's like a bad penny that just keeps showing up over the years. But the Supreme Court, give us the ruling that, that we felt like they should have. You know, that the Clean Water Act clearly defined the waters of the U.S. when it was put in place, and the Supreme Court has upheld that definition. It what it does at the farm level, it allows producers to do what they need to do, you know, that's best for their land. Our land is our base. Our land is, you know, is what allows us to either be in the pig business or to produce crops or to raise cattle or whatever, you know, we want to do. So we're going to protect that. And we know that land better than anybody else. As far as, you know, regulation and government oversight, we have that with our state departments of natural resources. Pig farms are zero discharge. So we're already required by law to be zero discharge. We didn't need another government agency coming out of D.C., that, you know, one size fits all, coming out on our farm and you know, with just more red tape. So we're excited about it. It gives producers the right to farm the way they need to farm, you know, working with a more local government to make sure that that, you know, everything's being done right.
So what would you like from a new definition? Because you know a new definition is coming.
Well, we like the definition that's there. I certainly do. You know, we don't need the government, you know, monitor, trying to monitor every puddle and every ditch, you know, out here on every farm. That just doesn't work. So navigable water is always meant, you know, a waterway that you could take a watercraft on at some point. And they defined wetlands as, you know, a water area that's adjacent or connected to that. That seems like a pretty good definition to me.
Scott, how big is the threat to the swine herd from foreign animal disease like African swine fever?
I can tell you, African swine fever is on the mind of every producer, and because it would be so devastating if it showed up in our herd. One positive pig affects the entire industry, because we would lose our export markets overnight, which would just be devastating to our market price. So at MPPC, we're working on prevention, trying to keep it out of here. And we work with the CBP, the Customs and Border Protection. They have beagle teams that work at all the ports, or dog teams. They use beagles out in public, and they use bigger dogs in cargo areas. But, you know, all the products coming in to the U.S. are inspected by dogs to try to keep it from accidentally coming in. We know what products that are coming into the country that end up in animal feed, and those have they're stored for a period of time so that we don't, you know, bring the virus in that way. So, you know, a lot of work's being done. And then after prevention, we're also working on preparedness. If we do end up with the disease in this country, we've got to get our arms around it quick, and we've got to get it stamped out. So we're working with the NAMS lab, you know, the National Animal Laboratories, to make sure they have what they need and they're prepared to do the testing that it would take. We're working to build up the veterinary stockpile so that we have the equipment we need to eradicate the disease. And also making sure, you know, APHIS has the personnel needed to get our arms around it and get it cleaned up. At MPPC, we're also working with our counterparts in Canada and Mexico, because we really got to keep it out of the Americas, out of North and South America.
Scott, Senators Cornyn and Klobuchar have introduced the Foreign Animal Disease Prevention, Surveillance, and Rapid Response Act of 2023. Are there pieces in that legislation that go along with what you just mentioned of needed aspects to protect the herd?
Yeah, there's a lot of those things I talked about are in there. They're also in the Farm Bill. And so we talked about African swine fever. The same would be true for foot and mouth disease. The difference there is foot and mouth disease would also affect cattle and sheep. But we were able to get a vaccine bank for foot and mouth disease in the 2018 Farm Bill. And we're asking that that bank be kept up to date. And so that would happen as well. There's different foreign animal diseases that are on the radar, but foot and mouth and African swine fever would be at the top of the list of ones to watch out.
Scott, trade is very important to the bottom line for pork producers and for the industry overall. Are there particular countries or issues that you'd like to highlight as positives, or are there particular challenges that you share along with other producers?
Yeah, you know, Mexico became our largest customer last year by volume and by value. And they've been at the top of the list for a long time, but topped both those lists last year. Very much appreciate the amount of product that they take or that, you know, that they purchase from us. China's back in the market again after some production changes over there in volume, which, you know, we appreciate China being in the market. They add value to the carcass in a way that's a challenge for us to add here. I guess the short definition of that is they eat parts and pieces that we don't enjoy as much in this country. So always glad to have them in the market. There's opportunity in India and the Philippines and Vietnam. You know, we got some tariffs there in Vietnam, so we get some more product in. Nigeria is becoming, you know, a growing market for us. But a lot of our product moves into Central America and South America. So exports are always top of mind for producers. But what I like for people to understand is, you know, it's about product mix. You know, we're going to eat all the bacon. We're going to eat all the ribs in this country. But all the other cuts, there's extra. And so to, you know, for the American consumer to keep the cost down on what they enjoy, we need to export those extra cuts, to somebody that's willing to pay a nice value for them. And so when we're out looking for markets, we need specific markets for specific cuts. So appreciate all of our trading partners out there and, hope that we can continue to provide them a, you know, high quality product.
Scott, the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity, catching some attention from the work of the Biden administration. Are you seeing as much out of that particular negotiation as you would like from the pork perspective?
We're sure hopeful there. Catherine Tai has done a great job keeping pork on the table in those talks. You know, long term, we are excited about that framework and expect some good things there. But like any trade deal, you know, it takes time. But sure appreciate the administration keeping pork in the conversation.
The Senate Judiciary Committee had a hearing on farm labor. Is there enough H-2A visas to satisfy what agriculture and certainly the livestock industry needs?
You know, H-2A visas do not work very well for the pig industry. They are a seasonal visa, and we have a challenge demonstrating that very much of our work is seasonal. Some of it is, but it all certainly isn't. Producers have been using TN visas to bring in some help, but labor is a challenge. You know, when we look at where the unemployment rate's low, you know, it's where the pigs are raised. In fact, where pigs are raised, unemployment's at 3% or below. But what the piece that doesn't show is the aging population. I know in my little community of 2,500, you know, our graduating class is 20 to 25% smaller than it was 30, 40 years ago. And, you know, the size of our town's the same. So, you know, that demonstrates, you know, smaller families, aging populations. We just don't have the worker pool to draw from. So, you know, figuring out how we're going to to get people to raise pigs, because, you know, obviously we can't just pick our businesses up and move them to where unemployment's a little higher. You know, that's a real challenge. So been talking to Congress about changing the H-2A visa program where it would allow year-round workers and allow more of them. That would be helpful.
And finally, is the product of the USA label debate another version of country of origin labeling?
Well, I tell you, it is to our trading partners, and that's our challenge. You know, if we had issues when it was mandatory with our trading partners, you know, we had some trade cases filed against us, and our trading partners are struggling to see the difference in it this time around. So, you know, we've not been supportive of that. You know, we think the free market works great for something like that. You know, if a company or a producer or whatever wants to put a label on a package and sell more at a higher value, great. But we don't need that in place in a way that it looks we're discriminating against our trading partners.
Well, Scott Hayes, we want to thank you for taking time out of an awfully busy schedule raising hogs and crops and kids and grandkids to spend time with us here on this edition of Open Mic. Scott, it is Open Mic, and you today have the last word.
Well, I just want to thank you for covering the industry, an industry that I'm proud to grow up in and glad that my kids and grandkids are growing up in. And I'd certainly encourage everyone to look at the value of pork and find your favorite cut and get it on the grill with this weather being what it is. It's a great time to be out grilling and hanging out with family and friends.
Our thanks to Missouri Hog Farmer and National Pork Producers Council President Scott Hayes, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. Learn more at Bayer.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.